Norbit was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Do you want to do that again without me laughing over it? I'm sorry.
No, I think it helped.
Okay.
I think it added. Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with Molly Brown's, two of Molly Brown's many brothers who were in the first scene and then never referenced again.
Right?
Like, she brings dad to live at the mansion and is like, I may have other siblings. Doesn't matter. Anyway.
They didn't learn to read and write.
They didn't. They're still out there wrestling for fish. I don't know how that movie. The Unsinkable Molly Brown was 45. Tied with Police Academy.
Sounds about right.
Police Academy wins.
A double feature.
Wins the tiebreaker, because apparently I gave Police Academy a 55. No memory of this, but.
It was during the pandemic.
Just a little bit of joy. But, you know, both of those movies, it's like we're talking about Singing in the Rain and National Lampoon's Vacation compared to Norbit.
There was a period of time where I was like, is this the worst movie I've ever seen?
I'm leaning towards yes. I was like, I would prefer to be watching The Room right now.
Oh, for sure. Like, absolutely.
At least The Room was done by a bunch of unprofessionals.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like a $250 budget. Like, I don't even.
Who is this for? I mean, I guess we'll get to, people saw it, apparently.
Yeah,
who wanted
why?
This?
Why?
I mean, like, Eddie Murphy wanted it. He was like, this sounds like fun for me. Everybody else, Charles Murphy also got a writing credit, right?
Yeah.
So, like, does this exist?
Was this before or after the clunks or the clumps?
After. So, I was trying to capture that magic.
Yeah. Like, people want to see Eddie Murphy in a fat suit. That's what.
No.
I assume none of us had seen it before.
No.
Fuck no.
I would have been like, I am quitting this podcast.
We should have offered to watch Molly Brown again. We should have said, okay, Tony, we know you're mad. We didn't go in depth. I'll do that 3 hours again in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Before. It's just so mean-spirited every moment.
Everybody. Like, this is offensive to black people, fat people, people not considered conventionally attractive, orphans, Chinese, people in abusive relationships. I think the only people that came out on top are the pimps.
Yes. Like,
oh yeah, they look great.
And that's why I was like, the thing that made me go, maybe this is not the worst movie I've ever seen, is that when his friends are delaying, when
yes.
they're stalling at the wedding,
right?
I laughed out loud like two or three times.
Same. Like, that was the right. only time
yes.
that I actually laughed.
No, I had a list. It was that... launching a child out of a bounce house, always going to chuckle a little
bit. There were a couple physical comedy things where even though they were steeped in anti-fatness, I was like, okay, it is just funny to watch a human being fly. It's just funny.
The heart rate bit, the bit where she's leaning,
yeah.
Oh, I was like, okay, all right. And the word nippleopolis. I was like, okay, fine. I'm counting it.
Also, good prosthetic nipple.
Like under the shirt?
When the nipple is pressed against the glass, I'm like, that is what a nipple pressed against glass looks like, and I'm impressed they achieved that with rubber.
Well, it was...
I got questions of how you know what a nipple pressed against glass looks like. On my 48 years on this earth, I don't think I've ever seen that in real life.
Robin goes to the car wash every morning. It's not the normal car wash. I mean... I wondered, I was like, will there be, I feel like I'm insulting you. I was like, will there be one of us who's like, I mean, and any, you can kind of like, all right, let's say I was dumb and high and had never entertained the notion that anything can be offensive.
Right.
I just had never even thought of that. Is there enough here? Because it's Eddie Murphy, every now and then there's like a line delivery that works.
Yeah.
And it's there's a few other funny people like Cat Williams and
Eddie Griffin
and so it's like, is there an art? And then like I sat with the movie, you know, for the next day and I was like, it's just so offensive. It's that list. That list doesn't even cover
right.
everybody.
No.
It's just so mean and angry. And the opening scene of this movie is a baby getting thrown out of a car.
Yeah.
And then a pet duck being decapitated.
Right.
Like, it's just, there's so much anger in there.
Yeah, and calling the baby ugly, like, from Jump Street.
Right?
Like my God. Like, right? Really? Can we, like... Eddie, who hurt you?
Also, that baby, not ugly.
No, he was adorable.
Oh, that was another thing. The child actors were so precious.
Yes.
That's another point in this movie's favor, but like, that's it.
Right.
They're so little.
That's as much as I can give you.
I mean, I do think as much as this, like the long list of things, but like the main thing is that this movie is just cruel to black women.
Yeah.
And fat black women in particular, mm-hmm. but black women in general, this movie exists to make them
right.
look bad. And that makes me angry.
And what makes matters even worse is that, and it's even more mean-spirited, is the fact that they did not get a black actress.
Exactly.
To play this role. Right. Eddie Murphy is in a fat suit and cross-dressing in order to make this quote-unquote joke.
Right.
Like, that's worse.
Because there's no black woman signing off on this. The
right.
closest that they get is Tandy Wade Newton being there as the completely just, I don't want to say unwritten.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Love interest. And it also, it's worse because she is rail thin mm-hmm. and light-skinned.
Yes.
It just... Ugh, the whole thing is just gross and mean, and I hate it.
It's nails on chalkboard.
Allegedly, they wanted that character to be as skinny as possible. And in fact, she lost some weight.
Oh,
fuck
my God.
For the visual right. contrast.
Oh, that's, it's like, that's ugly.
Did
that's...
you think we weren't going to know that one was skinny next to you rolling around in a comforter? Yeah, I get it. She's the little one.
Oh, this is gross.
Oh, I'm so mad.
You don't have to time me. Norbit's an orphan. He has a best friend named Kate. She gets adopted. He grows up and marries a big angry lady named Rasputia. Kate comes back, but she's engaged to Cuba. She wants to marry the orphanage. She wants to buy the orphanage, but Rasputia's brothers want to get the property for a strip club. Norbit hems and haws for about an hour, then declares his love for Kate, proves that Cuba is a con artist, and leaves Rasputia. He and Kate live happily ever after. Nothing happens.
No.
No, there are just extended sequences of Eddie Murphy existing in a fat suit, and we are meant to be entertained by that. And we're not.
I hate it.
The 20 or so second recap.
Yeah. So what shit show happened? Who's packed to the devil? Made this movie happen.
This isn't even really in here. This was a passion project for Eddie Murphy.
Passion project?
Yes. He wanted.
Sir, find different passions.
Right? He said he wanted to do something edgy because he had been doing the Shreks and he had done, you know, he had done a lot of families. He had done Disney's The First Failed Haunted Mansion. He had done almost nothing but family stuff and maybe some PG-13 stuff for several years. And he wanted to get back to something quote unquote edgy. And said the inspiration was watching YouTube videos of big women beating up little men and laughing hysterically.
Oh, Jesus.
That was, and he was like, oh, that's got to, we got to do this, and wrote a movie with his brother, and here it is. And allegedly, the first draft was, like, dark. The first draft was, like,
I would say the final draft was dark.
Yeah.
This movie was released February 9th, 2007. It was the fifth number one movie of the year, just after a fairly recent episode topic. The Messengers was the previous number one movie in America.
What
that's
was
the
that?
Kristen Stewart oh. in the barn.
The Sunflowers.
It was a rough 2007.
Won its opening weekend with $34.1 million.
Oh my God, that's like actual money.
It is. Crushed fellow debut Hannibal Rising came out, was in second with 13
recently
million.
Found out that Hannibal actor is dead, died in a skiing accident.
Get out.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Aww. It was in a correction in an article about Donald Trump talking about Hannibal, the late great Hannibal Lecter. And they like in the original piece, they were like, none of the actors who have played Hannibal Lecter died. And then I was like, correction, the guy in Hannibal Rising died in a skiing accident.
My head
ago.
Hurts from that sentence. Like,
imagine Anthony Hopkins not being the first dead Hannibal. He's like 94.
Imagine being a presidential candidate and talking about. What the fuck?
We got enough. We got enough to be angry about today.
We don't have time. Sorry. I'm so sorry I invoked Donald Trump.
Just a one-week winner fell to third the following weekend behind Ghost Rider and Bridge to Terabithia. This was a hit. It was in the top 10 for 6 weeks. Made $95.6 million, 30th place overall for that year. And I can't believe I'm saying this. Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Oh, this fucking Christ.
This movie is an Oscar nominee.
For makeup, I assume.
Having been nominated for best makeup.
The makeup branch fucking loves the fat suit.
Oh, yeah.
It's their favorite thing on this goddamn planet.
Best makeup nominee alongside Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. The winner was La Vie en Rose, the three nominee era.
I agree that shaving off someone's eyebrows is a better contribution to the motion picture arts and sciences than this fat suit.
It's like I'm like, it's probably Pirates of those three, right? Like, I don't remember which Pirates that was, but I don't know. People have all kind of shit on their faces in Pirates. This is a fat suit, and La Vie en Rose was like, you made a person look marginally more. Anyway,
I've still never seen La Vie en Rose.
It's good.
I think that's the most recent Oscar-winning performance I have not seen.
That makeup is by legendary makeup and effects artist Rick Baker.
Who knows how to make a fake nipple.
Certainly. And he has won 7 Best Makeup Oscars. American Werewolf in London he won for, Harry and the Hendersons, Men in Black, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. He had previously worked with Eddie Murphy on Nutty Professor, but they had a falling out during this film. Murphy is alleged to have pulled a lot of diva behavior on this set.
No.
Thandi Newton's thing, she said he was almost never there for shooting. She said he has like 5 perfect stand-ins that look exactly like him, and in any shot that is not his face, that's not him. So anything where he's like off to the side, over the shoulder, opposite, she's talking to a stand-in.
I can't. Fuck this movie.
Okay, you're gonna make maybe passion he was, project and then you're not even gonna fucking show up.
Maybe he was in the makeup chair.
Allegedly, I guess he was probably in the makeup chair for a lot of that.
Allegedly Respucia was like 7 hours and Mr. Wong was like 5, so
unnecessary.
I gotta say, the thing about the makeup in this movie is that it is too good. It would work better it would still be awful, but I think it would work better if Respucia were recognizably Eddie Murphy, right? Because it makes it...
You mean like Madea?
Yes. If it's just like we are doing the before women were allowed to be funny thing of putting a man in a dress.
Right.
I could distance myself a little bit than in a way where they made him look like an actual woman, right?
Monty Python.
Shoved into this hateful...
I don't know, man. I never lost sight that it was Eddie Murphy.
Okay. To me, it looked like a person. And they were like, we're going to design a person who is could be anyone and then make them awful. With it's the lack of... Like, this sounds weird, but it is the lack of consent of black women that makes this so much more gross to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gross to begin with. Just to be clear, if they had found a black woman to play this role, it would still be horrible.
Right. Because I'd be spending the whole time thinking, why?
Why did you do this? Like, yes. But it just feels so much more mean.
Sometimes it is because when she's in a bikini...
Oh, yes, you're right.
That's an actress with a green-screened Eddie Murphy face.
So that's not a fat... Wow, okay.
Also, like, a good-looking actress is the other thing. It's like there are various times in this movie where it's clear that somebody is horny for Rasputia's body.
Right.
And so then why make it an object of ridicule?
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't make it an object of ridicule, period. Even if it doesn't make you horny, it's a human being. But God, if it's making you horny.
Well, and here's, this was my other thing. It's like, I listen, I don't know why anyone thinks that, like, ooh, fat is funny. But if, even if I somehow take that on the face of it, doesn't it undercut it if it's a fat suit? If you're like, oh, we're going to look, there's this on the water slide and all of that. It's like, I know I'm looking at rubber. It's like right. having jokes about a tall person and it clearly being a normal person on stilts.
Yeah.
Like, why is it funny?
Yeah.
Why is it funny if you think this is funny?
I think the whole, and what's really fucked up is that it could have been a funny movie without that. Like, she could have just been like, and not to say that abuse is funny, but she just could have been a normal size, like, awful woman.
Yeah.
To mm-hmm. Norbit. And that, what the joke lies in there is that he is, like, mealy mouth and just, like, too precious and quiet to stand up for himself and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, like, why do we have to come to, like a physical just bashing? That's...
I know we don't acknowledge the Razzies anymore. I'm waiving that rule for 1 week. Because I would like...
This one cleaned up.
I would like to note that they did see fit to give Eddie Murphy worst actor for Norbit, worst supporting actor for Mr. Wong, and worst supporting actress for Rasputia. And
well, it's played. Like,
you know what? Yeah, I'm giving you that one.
Right. I'll allow it.
Yeah. I'll allow it.
Let's talk about Dreamgirls.
Why?
Dreamgirls was...
Well, I know Eddie was...
yeah. Well, this is... this will be most of the episode. If you need to run to the grocery store, now is the time. Dreamgirls was released just 2 months prior, December 4th, 2006. Critical hit, commercial hit. Nominated for 8 Oscars, including Best Supporting Actor for Eddie Murphy. Everyone was calling him the favorite until Oscar night. The red carpet people were like, Eddie Murphy is getting his Oscar tonight. He lost to Alan Arkin in Little Miss Sunshine. Jennifer Hudson did win for Dreamgirls. Dreamgirls ended up only winning 2 Oscars, Jennifer Hudson's, and for sound mixing. And the allegation, the long-standing truism, is that because Norbit came out in between, like the trailer dropped right during, I think the trailer dropped in the heat of precursor season, and then the movie came out right when ballots were going out.
Right.
That Norbit is the reason that Eddie Murphy didn't get that Oscar. You said last time there's more to it than that.
I mean, there's always going to be. There's there's a lot more to it than that. But I would argue that first on the list of the Academy has it in for Eddie Murphy is this moment.
Mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Eddie Murphy. Before I even go into this, let's have a big round of applause for all the winners tonight, huh? Yeah. And the losers tonight, too, because yes, for the losers. I know how it feels to be a loser. I know you've got your tux on and you feel real stupid right now. For the losers, you gotta make them feel good. At first, when they came to me and he said he wanted me to present the award for Best Picture, my management came and they told me that the Academy had picked me in. And my first reaction was to say, no, I ain't going. And I said, my manager said, but why? I have a white manager, so I talk to him. But why? And I said, I'm not going because they haven't recognized black people in the motion picture industry. What are you talking about? Black people won Oscars. I said, well, black actors and actresses that have won Oscars throughout 60 years was like, I think Hattie McDaniel won the first one, then Sidney Poitier won one, and Lou Gossett won one. And I'll probably never win an Oscar for saying this, but hey, what the hey, I gotta say it. Actually, I might not be in any trouble because the way it's been going is about every 20 years we get one, so we ain't due to about 2004, so... By that time, it's all blown over. I said I wasn't going. And my manager said, you just have to go. You can't snub the Academy. So I came down here to give the award. I said, but I just feel that we have to be recognized as a people. I just want you to know I'm going to give this award, but black people will not ride the caboose of society, and we will not bring up the rear anymore. And I want you to recognize us. He said, well, fine, it's done. I said, no, when do I have to be? They said, well, you don't have to get there until about 9 or 10 because it's the last award of the evening. So I'm hearing that. And in keeping with a great old Hollywood tradition, the best picture, nominees for best pictures are.
I think that there are members of the Academy who were voting in 2007 who were like I do not forgive you for this.
Well, it's less than 20 years later.
Right. And I mean, it's got to be
50% or more the same voters who were voting
right
at that time.
And the counterpoint is that Kim Basinger also called out the Academy in the 1990 Oscars for not giving enough nominations to Do the Right Thing.
We've got five great films here. And they're great for one reason. Because they tell the truth. But there is one film missing from this list that deserves to be on it because, ironically, it might tell the biggest truth of all, and that's Do the Right Thing. Yes. 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 Okay, so on to business.
And she won less than a decade later.
I just want to thank everybody I've ever met in my entire life.
But the other counterpoint to the counterpoint there is that she's a white lady, yeah. Right? So, like, yeah. I do think that there was this, like, lingering resentment of Eddie Murphy for calling them out. And I also think Denzel Washington won his first Oscar because of Eddie Murphy. And also being How's the greatest work? Actor of all time, period. Because Eddie Murphy was like, you don't give black actors Oscars. And then the next year they give Denzel Washington an Oscar. So,
well, it is true enough that the phrase the Norbit effect means an actor or, you know, director or whatever, you know, kind of undermining their own moment of acclaim by doing a throwaway movie. The argument that I saw when I looked into this is Dreamgirls wasn't doing that well.
That was the other thing I was going to say. Dreamgirls not getting a Best Picture nomination.
Or director or screenplay, I believe.
I can't remember screenplay, not director for sure. I mean, it got the most nominations of any movie that year, but not Best Picture, which I think has maybe only happened like one other time.
What I saw is it is still the most nominations received by a movie that was not nominated for Best Picture.
I would have said it was They Shoot Horses, Don't They? But like, that's in the 60s, right? Yeah. Like for a long, long, long time, whatever movie got the most nominations was a shoo-in for a Best Picture nomination. Dreamgirls not getting that is a really good indication of the Academy just didn't like that movie.
Right.
Which I think is bogus. That movie's awesome. But yeah, I do think it is a lot more complicated than the Academy didn't give Eddie Murphy an Oscar because this movie is so bad. That doesn't make this movie any less bad.
I think it didn't. I think it's, at the very least, it certainly didn't help.
Yes.
As did the fact that everybody loves Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin was great in that movie, has an incredible career.
Yeah.
There, like, that was one of the best supporting actor years. You've also Jackie Earle Haley in Little Children. Super terrifying, creepy performance. Mark Wahlberg in The Departed. Like,
it was kind of fun.
I'd honestly, it was kind of fun. It would have been hard. Like, as much as Mark Wahlberg's a piece of trash, I would have, like, held my pencil over that circle. You know what I mean?
I'm the guy who does my job. You must be the other guy. I'm like, yes.
Right? I fucking love that line.
Yes, he's very satisfying in that movie. So listen, it was a tough year. Tough year.
It was. I think at the very least, if that needle is teetering, Norbit shoves it very hard in the other direction.
Too bad that Jupiter Ascending, even though it is a masterpiece, did not do the same for Eddie Redmayne. Justice for Michael Keaton.
Anyway. So, yes, Norbit's lasting cultural legacy, other than breaking up the Rick Baker-Eddie Murphy team-up. invoked anytime an actor has a silly movie coming out after an acclaimed movie. I mean, there's trivia, I guess, but I don't. I will note that this is a very rare case where the appeal to the MPAA worked. This was initially rated R.
They
said,
what?
Yeah, they sent it back. They said, why? And it came back
for the
PG-13.
Police whistle joke?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
I don't think you get ours for, like,
alluding to oral sex.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Why, Tony?
Why? Tony, why? My guess is because CNN cut to the anchors while he was at the DNC. And he wanted to punish us generally.
Just us, the collective we. I could find no real reason as to why, other than recently it has come up that, like in the news, that Jordan Peele is saying that Get Out was inspired by the popular Eddie Murphy stand-up joke.
Which we talked about in our Get Out episode, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I have some vague memory of clipping that into something.
Right, yeah.
Has Terry Crews been around recently?
I don't know.
He wasn't bad.
He also looks weird with hair.
A little bit.
A little bit.
That's Colin's observation.
He is on the list of people who handled themselves well in this. You know what? I did we all watch it on YouTube with ads?
Yes. And at some point, I was like, God, I'm really tired of seeing Donald Trump's face. And then I was like, the alternative is spending money on Norbit.
Right. I rented or got it from the library on DVD, but I couldn't bring myself to like sit and watch it in one sitting on a, on the fucking DVD player, which thank God you were like, hey, it's on YouTube for free with ads. And I'm like, bet.
The act of putting the DVD into your DVD player was going to suck some tiny piece of your soul out.
It was bad enough I had to request the DVD at the library. See, it's like, first my dog eats a library book, and then I have to request Norbit on DVD.
That's how I felt about the act of paying for it. I was like, I feel dirty enough typing those six letters in, let alone. And it was the only time in my life I've ever like been watching a thing and then suddenly hear a dire voice saying millions are crossing the southern border, and I went, oh, fine. This is a bit of a relief. Yeah, but whose fault is it this time? Am I supposed to tell them to keep doing the thing or call who and say stop with the donate to the great? Sounds excellent, as long as it's not in orbit. Sounds good. The word is not redeeming. There's nothing redeeming. I guess it's competent. I guess there are not large...
I would argue no.
No?
Okay, think about how they light...
Not from a script... Okay, yeah.
Think about how they light Tandy Way Newton.
Yeah.
She's always gauzy.
Yes, in this, like, angelic type of a glow.
Like, if you ever watch the Star Trek original series or soap operas, like, they're, like, TV lighting back in the day was very... Anytime a woman was...
Vaseline on the lens.
Correct. Vaseline on the lens and a very bright light on their eyes.
Yes.
And whoever shot this movie is from that school.
Yeah. Well, Brian...
And Tandy Way Newton is one of the most beautiful women on the planet. She doesn't need this help.
I know. And I don't understand. I still didn't get, like, what that accent or voice that she was doing. This is before she was... Before we even knew who she was, yes? Like, this was before Mission Impossible?
This is after Mission Impossible.
Well, she was one of the most popular people in Crash, which was before this. God,
Crash was before this?
Yeah, Crash. Yeah. So she was in a Best Picture winner 2 years earlier.
Son of a bitch. Yeah. Like, why?
She also, like, she's been around. Like, just, she's had a rough go of it. Starting with her not being able to use her actual name until, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
I would like to just sit down and have a conversation with her. Just like, hey, just talk. Let's let it out. Just come on. Tell me about your quest.
Like, she's in a Sally Hemings movie, which is, like, the true love story between Thomas Jefferson and Sally. Like, she plays Sally Hemings. Like, she's had a rough career, which maybe she's complicit in. I'm starting to worry.
I don't know, because there was a point where it seemed like she was standing up for herself. Like,
when she took her name back.
Well, before that.
Okay.
She was refusing to, I think it was when she got married or when she had kids, but she was refusing to do nude scenes because she was saying that her body is for... Feeding her child, like her naked body is for her husband now, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, yeah.
And then someone said, what if you're a robot?
Yeah, exactly. And then then Westworld came out and I was like, well, apparently that thought was just tossed out of the window, huh? I don't But also, like, she had, I think Westworld was probably be her best role that I've seen her in.
I did not really watch that show, but the times I've seen her in it, I've been like,
yeah, like I stopped watching it after a while, but.
I really enjoyed. There's a reason that show just fizzled away.
Right.
Yeah, I famously don't watch series like Robin Doesn't Read, and I made it 2.5-ish seasons of Westworld, and then it was like, I don't think I got the Lost alarm started going off in my head. Like, this isn't going anywhere. Right.
Speaking of Lost, I hear somebody has cut to anything except Norbit. I hear that someone has chronologically cut Lost into order to watch, and you can watch it like that, like with like all their flashbacks first and all that business. It's called chronologically Lost. I haven't looked it up yet, but I hear that.
That sounds kind of awesome,
right?
I don't want to actually spend that amount of time watching Lost.
No. I know. Like, I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah. Right.
But I was like, I don't want to go back in.
We have to go back, Camila.
Imagine, I guess I can relate to the movie in one regard and only one regard. Imagine having that long lost love, having that dream girl, to use the word, and having that person come back in your life. And then finding out that she's engaged to Cuba Gooding Jr. Really, could your mind get through that?
I don't.
Could you endure?
So. No.
I thought Cuba looked really good in this movie.
You know, and I was thinking, like, Cuba, for me, the least offensive thing in this film. Like, that's for me.
Words I never thought I'd hear you say.
Exactly. Like, sure, when he showed up, I was like, ugh. But by the end of it, it's like, you know what? That's fine.
During the only good part of this movie, the Cat Williams and Eddie Griffin distracting people scene, him slowly collapsing in on himself in the pew, I'm like, Oscar winner, Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yep.
Really, really bad movie.
Well, that's Norbat.
It's Tony, if you were angry that we didn't have a lot to say about Molly Brown,
this was not redeeming in any way whatsoever.
Also, I looked up how to pronounce misogynoir and found out it was coined in 2008. So I did not have time to continue to research this. But I wonder, I should like go and look at that woman's thesis and be like, does she mention Norbit? Oh. Because maybe. It seems the timing is correct.
Tell me I'm not crazy about this. The weird thing about the makeup nomination, which I guess doesn't include, does makeup include a fat suit?
Yeah.
Don't you feel like
fat
she
suits
was...
have won makeup Oscar several times as recently as The Whale.
Oh, The Whale. Don't you feel like she was a different size in every scene? Like, weren't there a few scenes where you were like, well, you're just kind of top heavy and normal shape, and others where she was the blob?
What I was saying, there are clearly times when somebody was horny about that fat suit.
Yeah. It's so odd. It's on top of how horrible it is. All of these people, nobody, I mean, I know nobody says no. I know people take, especially when it's Eddie Murphy, everyone's just going to take the check and show up and do their job. But it's just,
it's the fact that this was a quote passion project.
Yes,
that's what really, like, this is more than just showing up and taking a check. Like, he saw somebody's punk ass YouTube videos and was like, yes, this is what I want to do.
Like, I don't know, learn to needlepoint.
Anything, just don't involve us.
Sustainable farming
and your bullshit.
Horseback riding. You have so much money.
So many kids. How about take an interest in your fucking kid, one of your 40, 57 kids?
He has 57. How many kids does he have?
Like 8 or 9.
Okay, that's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of fucking kids.
So talk to one of them a day and right. You are one left over. At least.
This is when I found out that he doesn't he have a kid with a Spice Girl that like
yes they, Mel Brown
they did have to do a not the you are the father thing like they had like he insisted on going to the DNA test and reluctantly accepted
and he has 10
a Spice
children.
Girls
10?
Child.
Okay, so man, you got to call more than one of your kid every day. This should take up enough of your time that you can't write this movie.
Yes, yeah, and I'm pretty sure he totally knocked up one of. Spice Girls.
I mean, who among us?
I mean, out of all of them, yes, Mel B would be the one.
Yeah.
I guess this is coming. I guess the why, Tony, is that, like, Shrek 5 finally got, like, the official fairly recently.
Oh, that's right. I think
Wait,
I heard
Shrek
some...
5 is still only, like, I thought that was well into production.
No, it's 2026, and I feel like they only, like, swore...
I have not seen most of the Shrek franchise. I've seen the original Shrek, and I've seen Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, which is surprisingly great.
In June 2024, while promoting Axel F, he finally said, yeah, I'm working on it.
Oh, okay.
And I guess Axel F would also be a reason as to why Tony.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Well,
what I was going to say is I am really excited about Cameron Diaz coming out of retirement, and I hope that she comes out of retirement more than just into the voice recording booth for 3 hours for Shrek 5. Oh. So that's why I'm emotionally invested in Shrek 5.
Really?
Yes.
Really? I mean, you feel that deeply about Cameron?
Yes. Huh. I'm just defensive of her.
There was a great, never listen to any other movie podcasts. We are the only one. But if you ignore me, What Went Wrong is a good movie podcast. And they had a two-parter about the making of Shrek that was fascinating. I had no idea the long and labored and innovative and like technology, like groundbreaking development of Shrek. That was like a big thing because they pointed out that the previous like feature length computer animated things were really Toy Story and Ants. Mm. And because in Toy Story, they're toys, and in Ants, they're shells. Like those movies avoided having to figure out like skin and hair and muscles and everything.
Really,
and
hard stuff.
Shrek had to do all of that. And like, there's this, you could see the early tests that look terrible, and the whole thing with Chris Farley dying in the middle of production.
Back and watch Shrek now, it looks pretty terrible.
Well, yeah.
But like, you know, good for the time.
we're stalling. a number. Like I said, there were a few things I laughed at. And I don't know, 12. I give it a 12.
Three.
Ooh.
Yep. I was going 5. Like I said, that was mostly all for Cat Williams' ad placement at the wedding.
Yes. Listen, I think that if this movie were not fundamentally hateful, I might get into high single digits.
Right, yeah. But, yeah.
I guess I thought, now I have to justify my 12 out of 100. I was like, you know, it kind of moves. It doesn't, I mean, it overstays its welcome in the first 30 seconds, but it doesn't stretch it out. I didn't want to give it the lowest score I've ever given. And that's the best thing I can say about it. Ends up at a 6 2/3. 6 2/3. While I scroll. Yes, we have a new champion. That is the worst score we have ever given.
So clap and boo. Put
the clap and can you do both at the same time?
I don't even. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I'm so.
I think the bit didn't. I think the bit didn't get where it needed to go.
We can always do it again. I do edit this show.
How appropriate for Norbit that an attempted humor just kind of. It also. There you go. It also took it solidly. That's 4 points below. That's the previous bottom two were the two Transformers movies, and those are 10 2/3 and 11.
I would watch every Transformers movie. Like in a marathon twice in a row before I'd watch Norbit again.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And have a much better day.
Yep.
Well, that's something, you know, that's that now it has that achievement. Good job. We didn't go to the trailer. Let's just not. Ugh. Why should we edit that? Why should we make our listeners hear that?
I mean, you can hear they added a bunch of goofy sound effects, but go watch it if you want to.
And the letterbox list is, your film fucking sucks. List of movies that fucking suck.
Oh, it's so bad.
Anything on the bingo card?
That's
adding insult to injury.
Right, yeah.
We need some fresh vetoes in here.
Is Tendi Way Newton British?
Oh, wait, she's, yes.
So thank God.
Brit, yes. Brit with U.S. accent.
Yes. I mean, she's like something, but whatever. I'm taking it.
This is the only good thing to come out of colonialism.
Oh, bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Yes, thank God.
Something
thank
came out of this.
All right.
Hold, please. No. I thought this was a directorial debut. Unsurprisingly, it's towards the end of a career.
Yeah, it's that dude from Head of the Class.
Brian Robbins is his name.
Didn't he direct something else we've watched? I feel like having that we've had that conversation
probably
before.
Well, there was another guy, too, though, that directs that terrible Nickelodeon.
Oh, Hardball. He directed Hardball with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
As well as Varsity Blues, Good Burger, The Perfect Score. But yeah, after this, he only made other maligned Eddie Murphy movies. He directed Meet Dave and 1,000 Words. Anyway, Camila has a bingo.
Yay!
Thank God.
Can you send your veto back in time?
Retroactively. Scrub this from my memory.
Yeah. Boy, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Robin, what you watching?
Oh, boy. So I had COVID, which is why this episode is delayed.
Yeah.
And so I
had a lot of time to catch up on
exactly
some viewing.
But I didn't actually watch any movies that anyone here super duper cares about. I did watch all of the TV show Veep under the theory that, you know, it could become completely unwatchable depending on how the next 70 some days go. Right. And so if I elaborately insult you, that's why. I've been Veep pilled. I watched the documentary, Elizabeth Taylor, The Lost Tapes, which is on Homebox right now.
Yeah, how's that?
Great. But also, I kept feeling like a little voyeuristic. Like, I was like, she's having a private conversation with an interview. Like, it's like for a memoir, or not for a memoir, for a biography, and then later for like a magazine profile, but like, it very much feels like listening to stuff you maybe shouldn't hear. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Which I struggled with, but then also some of the stuff she says is like, you know, fascinating. And it was also extra interesting to watch right after having watched Unsinkable Molly Brown, because like, she stole Debbie Reynolds' husband, and that is something they cover extensively. So I really liked it. Let's see what else. I kind of watched The Instigators.
How was that?
I also kind of watched it.
Yeah. Okay. It gets really... Colin loved it. So there's something to like there for people. But
it's got a great cast.
It really has an incredible
loaded cast.
Although, did you notice the with and credit? It's with Jack Harlow and Ron Perlman. And I was like, that is... what a world we live in. But yeah, I mean, it's there. Let's see. Yeah, those are the things that I've watched that are relevant to anyone here.
Did Colin not get COVID, by the way?
Colin did not. All three times that someone in our marriage has had COVID, the other one has avoided it. And we live in a small house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
I saw there's a couple of things that I really liked. My new number one of the year, a lot of days till election day, but right now it's Sing Sing with Coleman Domingo.
Oh, really? Which I missed the screening because I had fucking COVID.
You had the COVID.
I feel like it could really go either way. That's why I was like super excited to see it, because I'm like, this could be an unbearably.
It doesn't revel in that. You know, we see so many prison movies and movies about, you know, the prison system that are that tragedy from moment to moment. This is so much more celebrating a way that some people found not only relief, but growth in that environment, while not shying away from like how weird it is to, you know, get wrapped up in a theatrical production. If you're not familiar with this is based on a true story about a guy who started a theater program inside Sing Sing prison and used that for rehabilitation.
It's not just a pun.
Yes.
It's a true story.
Mm-hmm. It shows like, it's really weird to be working on a play all day and then, you know, have whatever terrible prison thing happen the next day. But ultimately, it's so powerful, and so you probably won't get the people who like to dehumanize the incarcerated population to watch this movie. But if you did, it would change their minds. Mm-hmm. It really makes you feel it. And most of the cast is people who were in that program in real life.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like the three or four leads are actors, and the others are people who were a part of that.
That's really cool.
And it's just beautifully made and beautifully done. And I also really liked The Deliverance. The Deliverance is getting mixed reviews. I don't even know
what that is. What is this?
That is the Lee Daniels movie that he filmed here.
That was made here
with Glenn Close and Andra Day and Anjanou Ellis-Taylor and Monique. The headlines are all coming out that this is the movie that ended the 15-year Lee Daniels-Monique feud.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thank God.
But they're friends now. I'm giving it a big hometown bump because it was made here and because I had a lovely conversation with Mr. Daniels about the filming.
Lee Daniels gives great interview.
Yeah. Yeah. He was very charming. But I like it a lot. They move into a new house and there's demons around, but it's very much like, I have enough fucking problems and now demons. Like there's money problems, there's family problems, dad's not around, Glenn Close is the grandma that moved in and she's stirring up shit, and that's the focus. And it's like, what? And you're a demon? God damn it.
That's interesting.
It's just fresh. It's just a fresh take on the possession thing. It's very, I thought it was very well made. A few people are like, oh, it's just spooky, it's over the top. I don't know. I liked it more than, what movie did we watch a month ago? The Possession. It was a better Possession movie than The Possession.
Well, good. I'm glad that
a movie I kind of liked.
Yeah.
That'll be on Netflix for you in around when you're hearing this. I think it's coming right out.
Is Anjanou Ellis-Taylor allowed to make movies that aren't on Netflix?
We'll free her one day. And Alien Romulus, I like. It's, you know, I mean, I kind of like crept back down to a 7 because I am a little bothered by the like ham fisting connections to the original.
I don't like zombie actors, zombie CGI actors.
I really
actors.
Don't like that.
It makes me feel incapable of watching the movie.
It's just
like I've only watched Rogue One once. Like which is, I think, a great movie. Like, yeah. It makes my body feel disgust in a way that I can't watch the movie.
Like, do you really feel like you made a difference to this movie because Ian Holm's ghost is in it? Like, it's not... The Peter Cushing thing, I could kind of be like, oh, I might give that to you. But, like, it's just Ian. He's like the fifth most important person in the original movie, which we're supposed to be kind of trying to distance ourselves from because we know Ripley's not going to show up.
Yeah.
Like,
and he was a human being and he's dead and let him rest.
Yeah.
Ghoulish and awful. And I hate it.
I don't like to make any argument that sounds like a slippery slope argument, but like it really feels like we're only a few years from going, Jimmy Stewart would be good in this.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, let's not do this. But other than that, it's very scary. It's very true to the original. The cast of people who are alive on this earth today are all great. you know, it's nothing you have to run out and see. But if you like alien movies, this is a good one. And the last few weren't. So I do recommend.
I did actually watch Alien Covenant for the first time within the last couple weeks. Boy, is that movie gross. And like, I know that's kind of the point of alien movies, but like, it's exceptionally gross.
Wow.
And that's all it is. It's just one gross scene after another, very little plot.
Also, at 6 out of 10, Trap is the best M. Night movie in decades. Congratulations. It wasn't bad. That's...
Oof, I felt like it was a trap.
Oh, yeah. Didn't have a good time in there?
I'm very conflicted mm-hmm. about my feelings on it because I'm still, like, as I logged it on Letterboxd, I hovered over the heart and I couldn't tell if I wanted to press it or not. Because as a movie, as... M. Night Shyamalan, I go in with a very low bar. Mm-hmm. I know that shit's not going to be exactly how I want it.
it's like but, a meal you know, at Denny's.
All right, yeah. It's like, you know what? Ah. But, yeah, I'm going to get constipated after this. But I feel like it was too much of a showcase for, like, without me even knowing that M. Night had kids, mm-hmm. after, like, 20 minutes in that fucking movie, I'm like, this person playing this Lady Raven, it must be a relative of his. And he's trying to showcase her singing career. She must sing in real life.
Does she sing in real life?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
boy.
His daughter. Who...
Sorry, everybody.
Within 1 year, one daughter gets a movie, and yeah. one daughter gets a movie where she's a vocal star.
Yes.
It's like, go on, next generation. Is like, no.
Exactly. No, no. So it was like, I feel like we spent way too much time with her on that and all of that business. He still doesn't know how humans talk or interact with each other.
No.
Like, none of the dialogue was believable, or just like the whole bit of what's her name, Haley, the who was in the original Parent Trap.
Haley Mills?
Yeah. Haley Mills.
She's like the FBI head.
We pull Haley Mills.
Haley Mills?
She is the most like underused
Miss Bliss herself?
Yes, right. Yes, exactly. Miss Bliss. We pulled her out and on set, and it's just like she's just very, her character is very important, but she's extremely underused.
Mm-hmm.
And the one they do, like, she's an FBI profiler is what she is. And she's supposed to know everything about this serial killer, but she barely has like any on-screen presence. And like that, she maybe has a page of dialogue, and the dialogue that she says is like very fucking robotic. Like, just the scene with her and the wife when she's like, I wish I could have listened to one of your lectures. And then it's aggravating. All that aside, I very much enjoyed Josh Hartnett's portrayal of this serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
Like just really just like on this line. And it's like there's a moment. It's like it goes from Kimmy's silly, but it's also like really kind of creepy as well. So he's just doing this really. And I think the worst thing for me was watching our Gen X's It Boy, Josh Hartnett, from like the early aughts. He's now like the uncool dad.
Mm-hmm. Especially, I have not seen this movie, but just like based on like the promo photos of him, I'm like, he was so fucking hot in Oppenheimer, right?
Yes.
And I'm like, let us have the Josh Hartnett renaissance that we deserve.
Exactly. If it makes you feel any better, he does take his shirt off
Yes, absolutely no reason. That was just for the girlies. That was just like a wink and a nod, just like, hey. We know there's somebody out there.
God, now I have to see this movie. Haley Mills and Josh Hartnett shirtless. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm still trying to figure out if I liked it or not.
Fingers still hovering over that heart.
I think my expectations are so low for him, like you said, that the fact that it was mostly just, how's he going to get out of this one? Oh, he got out of it. How is he going to get out of it? He did it again. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Go have fun.
But
movie.
It's all mostly like it's a series of luck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nothing makes any sense. The contrived getting her on stage with the singer and then the singer goes back to the house. None of it makes any sense.
The entire premise of the movie doesn't make sense. It's nonsense. I mean, it's a M. Night Shyamalan picture. Sense does not come into the picture. The beach makes you old.
If you have to see the 17 increasingly small hula hoops this movie jumps through to set up why it has to be a concert, but no one knows what he looks like. And they get there, it's just like, is everyone paying attention? Because we're gonna go over why this is happening again.
Yeah, he's very big on holding the audience's hand to walk through.
So you get there was part of a concert ticket stub at the safe house, but they don't. Oh my god. What else did you see besides Trap?
I think that's the only new thing that I watched. I've kind of been watching, a new movie. I started watching the show called Domino Day on AMC, BBC, AMC. Whatever, they're billing it as like, you know, the Buffy the Vampire Slayer for millennials.
I'm listening.
It's actually pretty good. Yeah. Lone Witch, I think it's like Domino Day colon Lone Witch or something.
Okay.
So it's about witches for the most part.
Great.
And I'm enjoying it. And it's also really neat because you have three female black leads.
Tight.
Right? And I'm like, this doesn't happen ever. and they're not speaking, and we're not like in some sort of poverty situation. Or right.
Not just two.
But three.
Three whole black women.
Right. And we're not like, you know, these like weird, like built up Tyler Perry versions of ourselves. Like, there's actually real women that are witches.
Tight.
it's definitely rooted in reality, these witches. Oh, that's it.
Saw How to Marry a Millionaire. Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, sure.
Betty Grable. Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall.
Very, very funny. That is one to go back to. And that was it. I never mentioned my friends at the Pittsburgh Classic Movie Club are constantly doing free screenings of classics like that. And it's not just the most obvious stuff. It's, you know, they get a little bit deep. And sometime soon, just Google them. They are going to do Dial M for Murder at the Rangos Giant Cinema.
Tight.
In the 3D it was released in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was released in 3D.
Yeah, that was one of the first wave of 3D movies.
What I should go to this, and I should wear my H's for Hitchcock shirt.
Yeah. We're going. And it may be our first married Pittsburgh outing, because it's like a week after. Yeah.
What is their definition? Like, what's the bracket for classic for them?
They say they go to the 70s. They don't really often get past about the 50s.
Okay.
But I've been to a number, and I've hosted some of their events. I hosted a North by Northwest earlier this year, and
I was just worried that our 80s movies were now considered classic.
No, they're not. They're not showing. If you go to that flashback cinema, they'll be like, "We're going to take you back to the Future 2." It's God. Anyway, let's draw a movie. Tony, be gentle,
please.
You did great on the DNC. At the DNC.
Yes, I'm sorry that Jake Tapper talked over you.
I love all the Twitter twatter about him being on there, the Twitter chatter.
Everybody who Tony Goldwyn exists in their heart as Fitzgerald Grant rises up
exactly.
Whenever he pops up at this kind of thing.
I don't know. He's still mad at us.
Tony.
Paw Patrol, the mighty movie.
Oh, Kaj will be happy.
Paw Patrol film. I'm double checking.
Is Kaja a Paw Patrol fan?
She is.
Has she noticed that women don't exist in that world?
She has two girl dogs. there are two girl dogs, and then, I don't know, she's always talking about Mayor Homdinger.
Maybe I'll see if Perry wants to come over.
Make this worth it.
Yeah. I know. Go find a child and...
Sean, now last time you said you can't just go find
kids,
a child.
Right?
Yeah, they have kids. I don't know if they're Paw Patrol children, but Norbit. Yeah, it came out 9th of February 2007.
Brianna.
Nope.
Beyonce.
Yes.
Single
ladies. Irreplaceable.
And how interesting that we're here because we had to replace Beyonce's movie. If we could stream the Beyonce movie, we wouldn't have to watch this or Paw Patrol.
Beyonce, please, please release Renaissance on home video.
I understand you're irreplaceable. You keep making us replace you.
Number one.
Weird being mad at Beyonce.
I know.
Pop brought it on herself.